it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to week 39 of the Foot Weekly podcast. It's a gameplay episode and I can welcome back, as I pretty much always do, Air Japes. Hello. How's the weekend been?
Weekend's been pretty good. You know, you always feel like it should be important to try to get some decent red picks during Ultimate Tots, and mine were, like, fine. I got Kvaradona, but he's, like, not as everything as I was hoping he would be. So, yeah. Kind of a bummer there.
Yeah, 1.4 million is still a lot of coins, but not had anyone raving about him. I assume you haven't used him yet, but...
I have used him. I tried to like really get him to be super spicy and work great, and I just couldn't do it. So he promptly went to the bench.
A shame, but you know, I wonder whether it's the medium. But we should move on to someone who's definitely not medium. He's high work rates at the moment. He's been probably all over the globe at this point. It's Richard Buckley. Hello.
Thank you very much, as always, Ben. Yeah, it's been a busy few weeks. Nice relative sort of 5 days off now before back down in London to find the 24 finalists for the FIFA World Cup. So yeah,
nice.
Excited to get a bit of FIFA in over the weekend and hopefully enjoy a Shapeshifters promo potentially coming this week as well.
Very exciting. And we have on this podcast as well a writer for foot.gg and someone who certainly knows a lot about gameplay mechanics, all that kind of stuff. It's Nafil Khan. Welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you for having me here. And yeah, it's good to be back. It's good to be chatting with you guys, three legends of the FIFA community.
Oh, that's very kind. You'll definitely be invited back. And we should... get into what we're going to start with, which is actually this question which Hugh asked and we spoke about on the content podcast this week, which is the supporter episode, but was interested to know if Nafil and Richard had a player they would put forward for this. But he was basically saying, as we're getting into silly season and there's not really a reason to save coins, who is the player people should try out before the game ends? And yeah, I'd be interested to know. Let's start with you, Richard. If there's anyone you would say people should go out and try. We're saying unlimited coin budget here, but maybe it'd be nice to know a player who's a bit cheaper and a bit more expensive and get some variety to it.
I've got a ridiculous shout, which I was one of the fortunate people to open up my level 30 rewards last season and got a Team of the Season Moments Neymar. And he is... He just makes the game a breath of fresh air. Like he feels incredible on the ball. The things that you can do with him is just, it feels like I'm playing a different game. After using Harry Kane for a long time, it feels like I've turned the leaf over and I've gone from 1990 into 2010. Like I've shot through into a different atmosphere. He is unbelievable. So he's one that's ridiculous budget, like what's, I think it's over 6 mil still, might drop if there's a nice bit of content coming out this upcoming weekend where there's a more incentive for players to try and you sell people on, etc. But I've got another shout, he's a player that I don't think people might not have used. He maybe doesn't look the most glamorous. He's got a few different versions of him as well. I think the top version is about 2.5 mil. There's a team of the year for 1.9. You might know where I'm going with this. if you've not used him, get your hands on Erling Haaland at one point this year, because he just, I get a sense of joy when I score with him. I don't know what it is. I don't really have any affiliation to Man City, but doing a couple of step-overs at Erling Haaland, seeing those 6'6" or whatever he is legs move before hitting it into the back of the net, and I've got the Erling Haaland song queued, so all I need to do is press space bar.
How does that song go?
It just brings me a... Haaland. That's all you need. That's all you need every time.
Yeah.
It's just fun. Like, he just makes... It makes the game fun, and it's just another way of playing. Like, it's a completely different way of playing FIFA 23 when you use him in the team. Because with the ball at his feet, he's not very good. Like, he's passing, he'll let you down. Doesn't have a 5-star skill move in him, so you can't twist and turn with him in the box. But if you can stick him over the top, if you can get him in those areas where it's very similar to Man City, first time cutback, going in on goal, he just doesn't miss. He's really, really enjoyable.
Yeah. The other thing I was going to say is, and I just wanted to squeeze this in before I forget, but there's a good chance Ibrahimovic gets an end of an era. And we know things previously were a bit prickly with him and EA in terms of rights. I'm sure he'll be happy to become an icon in FIFA, ultimately, or in EAFC, I should say. But I guess there could be some wrangling. It could take some time. So I think that would be a player that when he comes, I would definitely encourage people to do. Although I wonder how cheap he'll actually be. Probably not too cheap, considering he'll be very effective and maybe lengthy as well. But anyway, now Phil, let's hear from you. Who would you recommend to people to try out before the end of this year?
I have one recommendation for people, and he's a little pricey. Is about 1.2 million right now, I think, on the market. It would be Team of the Season Moments, Sadio Mane. I packed him during Bundesliga Team of the Season when everybody was running around with like 29 game loans of R9 up top, and I was no different. I tried him as well. And I'm not saying that Mane is better than R9 in any way. R9 is on a league of his own. But when I brought in Mane to like sort of take over on that striker role, there was something about the way that he moves and the way that he dribbles that goes through players. It's the one card that I feel like has almost everything you need in a striker. He can pass, he can score, he has a little bit of strength in him, not too much, but he can jostle with players if you need to. And he has those 5-star skill moves to weave around and just have a crack at goal. He's not left my squad ever since. He has been a permanent stay in there. Definitely recommend trying Sadio Mane out.
Nice. And I think, unless Japes has suddenly thought of someone that he didn't mention, we can probably move on from this. But
I mean, Mane was like, I think I gave like a shout for a version of Mane as well. Now that I've packed Robert Lewandowski as well, he's pretty fun and he's not expensive. Mm.
We were talking also, well, you said him, right, as a player that you feared.
Yeah.
As an attacking player. And actually, that's something else that might be fun to ask. Is there a particular player, Richard, first of all, that you really like fear coming up against?
Harry Kane. Yeah. Every game.
That was a popular one.
As soon as
one.
You see a Harry Kane, 4-3-2-1, Harry Kane, it's game over. I don't actually mind like playing against an R9 or... I feel like Benzema, Harry Kane, both score against me a lot.
Mm.
Oh, Benzema's a good shout.
I do feel like it has to be R9 in the right hands, doesn't it?
I think a lot of people use R9 are using the loan and just trying to just throw the ball to him. The people you want to be scared of is the people who's gone out and either packed R9 or bought R9 because he's not one of those. He's not like Mbappe, in my opinion, where you can just pick up and play.
Yeah.
You need to have an understanding of him as a player. The people who have that understanding, if they're good with R9, will ruin you.
Mm.
But yeah, a lot of people... I'm pretty comfortable when I play against R9. Kane, Benzema, and that's it really. Just them two score a lot against me.
Yeah. Now, Phil, any variation on that or are you in agreement?
No, those two players, Benzema and Kane, like just adding to what Richard just said, they have that thing about them where anybody can pick them up and they can use them to their maximum capability. Like whether it's long shots, whether it's first time cutbacks, no matter what you try to do with them, the ball somehow ends in the back of the net. And it's just terrifying.
Totally agree. And then what tactic are you playing at the moment? And I guess particularly, is there a particular tactic that you think is fun and people should use at this point in the cycle where, of course, the goal is really enjoyment rather than grinding out better results?
I think that, like, not quite underrated, but overlooked tactic this year has been the 4-4-2. And right now, that's my go-to when I'm trying to, like, get some wins in foot champs and not trying to just get five people behind the ball. Like, it gives you enough defensive solidity, you know, two banks of four, and just has that, just has something about it. You know, it's got the right movements, the right instructions. You can get the wingers up. You can get balls into the box. You can have one striker stay in and one striker who's moving back and forth, trying to create channels. And I think that's a tactic that people should be looking into right now. Just enjoy the game, be effective, but not slog on, like, just having eight people in your box defending the ball.
Yeah, and any particular, I mean, I guess it's probably straightforward. Most people know about 4-4-2s, but is there any particular personnel information you think's worth passing on? Like, do you tend to have one more defensive midfielder, one box to box, or is it kind of
you want to have
box to box at this point?
You want to have two box to boxes in there. Like, it's, like, personally, I would recommend having two box to box midfielders in there instead of having, like, the standard setup of one, like, destroyer in midfield and one kind of, like, balanced or attacking for, like, midfielder. You want two midfielders who do a little bit of both. You want wingers who have physicality to them, who can, like, run down and, like, try and help out a little bit in defense. And for strikers, you need to have one striker, like, one target man, somebody like Haaland or Harry Kane, for example, somebody who can just go into the box and take the strike. And you want one agile striker, somebody like Mane, or even like a winger who you're pushing towards playing into that striker role. Just, you need one, somebody who's agile and can do the dribbles, can beat defenders, and one target man up top.
That makes sense. And I think we can move on to maybe some more broad gameplay questions now. Bracco says, recently I've found that during games I'm controlling by being, say, 3-0 up, I start trying to work on building my possession and keep working the ball to discover different opportunities and see what runs my players are making. But then I concede a counter-attack goal, and when I try and take control of the game again, it seems that I often concede because my opponent is now in control of the game more or has the momentum. Are there any tips on how to regain control to get back in the mindset of maybe needing to score and focus? Because I feel like I drop off and go into cruise control in these games. I guess, like, Richard, first of all, I imagine that avoiding that situation is probably the best thing. So, you know, not sort of changing up how you're playing, or not, I guess, allowing that momentum to shift to some extent. So are there any kind of tips for doing that? Like, if you're a few goals up, what are you tending to do in the game to ensure you're kind of maintaining that lead?
Don't allow your opponent any sort of easy wins. I think it's a pretty simple one. Like, no silly fouls. Don't allow them to gain confidence into the game. Something that a lot of the pros do, it was actually Nightwatch who said this sort of thing to me, and that now I've noticed it, I bring it into my own gameplay. Because your opponent can't just pause the game whenever they want. They have to cue the pause. If you see someone queuing a pause, try for as long as possible not to let the ball go out. It just means the length of time before they can change something, whether that's personnel or instructions, tactics, if they don't have it preset, is longer. So it seems like a real sort of, like, simple thing, but I would say if you're in the 70th minute and you see your opponent cue a pause, just have that little bit more insight to not take a wild long shot and give the ball away and allow them to sort of change things up. Maybe just keep it for an extra couple of minutes and try and see the game out.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, because I've often noticed when people change tactic against me, they often are actually having to pause to do that. If I've been playing like the 3-4-2-1, they want to switch to, I don't know, a 4-2-2 or something that they feel can have an advantage, often they don't actually have that preset, and they're going to have to pause to make that change. So holding them off from being able to, I guess, try and get the upper hand tactically is a very good tip. And often I think that can be the thing that changes, and sometimes people don't notice when you're a few goals down. Like, I've had people message me saying, oh, look, you know, the game's broken, scripted or whatever. And what I've done is change tactic, right? And people don't necessarily pick up on it, especially if you do it on the D-pad, I guess. Anything from you, Nafil, on this question? Like tips for people trying to maintain a decent lead?
I will agree with what Richard said, and I will add to that. There's more than just tactical nuance to preventing somebody from making a pause. It's a lot of what ends up like winning and losing games is psychology more than anything. So what you've done that is not only have you like given them less time to make the change, you're frustrating them. And that's all there is to it. Whenever you go 3 goals up, and I've, you know, fallen victim to that myself, I go 3 goals up, 4 goals up, and I will sort of like kick it down a notch and be like, okay, like I need to play a smarter game now. I need to play possession. I need to like build up my plays. I need to be careful so I can maintain my lead. And forget that the way that I was playing is what got me the 4 goals in the first place. And I need to like continue playing that way. And it's about getting into your opponent's head and not letting the opponent get into your head, because you'll notice like you go 4 goals up, 3 goals up, and then suddenly the opponent scores and they're like doing a celebration, they're gritting, they're trying to like get you to lose your cool. And it's all about the psychology of maintaining your own composure and trying everything that you can to make them lose theirs.
Yeah, that makes sense. I know actually, Japes, in the past you've maybe said, oh, actually, like I'm not great when I go a few goals up and I often allow comebacks when I probably shouldn't. Would you say that's still true? Do you coast a bit? Or
yeah, it's because I decide that I'm going to just score like epic passing goals. Like I decide when I go up a goal, it's not like I even want to start trying skill moves. It's all of a sudden like I'm about to just play like one touch and rip you apart. And I give up, you give up counters when you do that. It's just not like there's an appropriate time to play that way. But like when your entire buildup is like, I wonder if I can play one touch all the way through. But I would say I've gotten better, or I'm pretty good at, even if I give up one silly goal for doing something, of just like shutting it down then, like flipping that switch off. I don't actually change anything when I go up goals. If I'm up 3, my goal is to then be up 6. There's no like foot off the gas. The only time that I change is if they clearly change their tactics and what I'm playing is no longer working the same way, then I'll consider making a change.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I feel like I don't get that much experience of doing this, because when you do go 3 goals up, people tend to quit anyway. So I can see why it might be something that someone's kind of unsure about, because how many times does that actually happen that you end up, you know, going beyond 3-0 up? I guess if your opponent scored early, perhaps they're more likely to stay at 4-1 or something. But yeah, it's an interesting point. I'm sure we'll come back to it. The next thing I wanted to ask actually is to you, Richard. You've obviously watched a lot of very, very high level competitive play going to the eChampions League final. And we know all about the prevalence of, say, the 5-4-1, 4-3-2-1 as well. But kind of beyond that, what were your take homes from those events? Any particular things you were seeing a lot, or anything that you're kind of thinking, I imagine that is something that EA will be looking at to try and change for next year because it was a bit too prevalent, or really any take home from those events?
First time over the top 3 balls.
Mm-hmm.
Just so strong. Emre Yilmaz, who went on to win the Champions League, incredible FIFA player. The best FIFA player in the world right now. A lot of pros will agree with that sentiment. However, I would say 50% of his goals coming from, and it's not necessarily just the simple, it's any sort of over the top through ball in any scenario. He can pull it off at any time. And that's the brilliance of him. But that mechanic shouldn't be as strong as it is. I think when the more you look at it, it's to do with the defenders' AI. They just don't track. They just don't run back whatsoever. So I think that will be something that they really have to look into for next year. It's always the case, especially when you look at FIFA as an esport, whatever was really good the year before typically isn't good the year after. So I think it will still be good, but I would imagine there will be changes to the defensive AI and whatnot in order to make that different.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other thing as well that Emre Yilmaz in particular did so good, the variation of set pieces. He probably had 3 or 4 different corners. One of the corners that he actually scored from, played short, the opponent moved the keeper with the right stick, and he just power shotted it in the near post. Wow. And it's that sort of thing where you go, well, why would you even do that? And he has the confidence that he's going to be able to aim it on target every single time.
Yeah, because that's a tight angle to score from, right?
Yeah. If the keeper saves it, it's a corner again, and then you can do something else. But if they move it so far out, you're going to score because the angle could be there.
But also, if you miss the target, you've got a pretty good chance of it being just their goal kick and you've lost the opportunity, right?
So he was doing that a little bit. And then once you start introducing one or two of those in, people then don't move the keeper as much. You can then get an easy cross into the box and try and score the header. So I think the over-the-top through balls and the variation of corners, set pieces in particular, were two big takeaways for me.
Mm. What were pros tending to do, did you find, from free kicks, actually? Because that's something that I'm always interested in.
Nobody really gives fouls away.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
like I don't really recall many times where, unless it's like a super cynical one where it's last minute and you've scythed him down to save a goal.
Mm.
Like the pros will not press circle so much, or even like they'll just stand off. So and only really press the ball when they have to press the ball.
Mm.
Free kicks aren't really something that's done a lot. I did see a couple of direct shots. There was one where he moved the keeper to the left-hand side of the goal and he went for sort of like a knuckle traveller over the top of the wall. I think he hit the post. But it's not really something... I think corners and to be honest, throw-ins. There's so many players who have got giant throw-in now that people are like making different angles and whatnot from throw-ins. So there were one where he had it like pretty much in his own half. He right stick to the player, ran him all the way down the line, and he just got rid of all the danger, just to launch the ball up the pitch with like a Rory Delap-esque throw-in.
Yeah, it's worth having a look at your players for traits, isn't it? Because the giant throw-in one, I mean, I think Davies definitely has it, doesn't he? It's a good one to point out. And also, actually, you can't be offside from a throw-in. I mean, plenty of people will probably know that.
You can take him as far up as you can.
Yeah, that's good fun. Any final point? I mean, that sounds like plenty for now, but...
Not particularly. I think, obviously, 5-4-1 was prevalent, but 4-3-2-1 also really, really strong. If someone matches up in a 4-3-2-1, typically the other person will go to a 4-3-2-1. If somebody matches in a 5-4-1, the other person matches in a 5-4-1. That's typically how it goes. Very rarely, unless you're watching like an Anders Vergang game where he will only play 4-4-2, will you see two different formations going at it.
Did you feel like he was at a significant disadvantage playing the 4-4-2 then?
No.
Mm.
I think he's just mechanically, he is, when he plays at his best, Anders, nobody, in my opinion, can beat him. And he's at his top flow and he's playing at his very best. The only problem is he's got probably the highest ceiling, but he's got a very low floor where when it does go wrong, like I've seen him crying on the stage before and it falls apart very, very quickly. I think the reason he probably didn't go on to win the tournament, he finished top four in the end. It was a tournament restriction to him. He started in the loser's bracket. He had to win, I think it was 7 best of twos. And it was just too many games in the day for him.
Yeah, that makes sense. Also, I guess, do you think though that he needs to play the 4-4-2 to be at his kind of mechanical peak? Is that what you're kind of saying? Because presumably, if he's so ridiculously technically good, if he just used the same formation as everyone else, you'd think he'd just win, right?
I think it's the 4-4-2 which enables him. So having two strikers in the final third, having the wide players coming in, he presses so well with the centre mids. It's sort of the perfect formation for his play style. Some players are just really good at FIFA but can adapt to different formations. Nicholas, perfect example of that, the Argentine. He will play any formation in which he needs to play to win, and he's got probably 3 or 4 or 5 different formations. Emes Tesari used to switch to like 4 different formations in the same game just to make sure that he's always doing something different for whatever the game needs. Anders will play 4-4-2 because that is what he's best in. And I think him changing to a different formation, you rub away some of that Anders " magic.
Yeah, and actually goes to show, you know, if you are good experience with the formation, it doesn't matter what the metas are, playing that formation can often lead to you reaping the rewards. No doubt he'll have coaches saying, you know, what's the most effective way for you to play? Is it to switch these other tactics? And actually, it turns out, presumably, they feel that he's going to get the best results with a tactic that suits him best, which that does. And actually, Anders 4-4-2 is something that a few people have said they've used and is very good for them. So I'll link it in the description of this podcast. Also, of course, in the Tactic Bank in the supporter Discord. Right now, though, let's take a break. We'll be back to talk about a bit of a FIFA myth and plenty more tips, pointers, and discussion, of course. Hello, listeners. Allow me a little bit of a ramble here because we're heading towards what is FIFA's end game. I mean, not just the end game for FIFA 23, but FIFA entirely. So if you have any thoughts on potentially different topics we could cover over the summer, especially because it's the end of FIFA as we know it, then, you know, please do send in any questions you might have, any topics you want covering, maybe ideas for guests you would like to come on the podcast for a discussion too. Always definitely open to any suggestions listeners might have, and you can send those in via all the usual ways, footweekly@mail.com and at footweeklypodcast on Twitter. At footweeklyben is my Twitter, and you can do the little Q&A thing on Spotify, comment on YouTube, really any way that's easiest for you to get in touch with any topics, any guests, anything along those lines. And look forward to seeing those. And if you would like more Foot Weekly content, including past Foot Weekly content, we've got some specials from previous summers which are still very much relevant. That connection episode went down really well. People have improved their gameplay experience massively because of that patron episode on connection, so do check those out. And you can go to support Foot Weekly, just search that in Google and it'll take you to Patreon, where you can sign up for just £3 a month. You'll be supporting the podcast, keeping it going. And if you do consider doing that, then that is greatly appreciated. And let's jump in to the rest of this podcast.
I'm Victoria Cash. Thanks for calling the Lucky Land Hotline. If you feel like you do the same thing every day, press 1. If you're ready to have some serious fun for the chance to redeem some serious prizes, press 2. We heard you loud and clear. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com right now and play over 100 social casino-style games for free. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Hello, welcome back after the break. Let's get into talking about body type. People will know, because it's something that's discussed, that body type is something that factors into how good a player is, at least to some extent. And it's also something that there's a lot of confusion about, and there's also some FIFA myths going on, I think, which we're hopefully going to clear up. And when we're talking about body type here, we're talking about the generic body types, not unique body types like Neymar and Mbappe. They have their own specific unique body types to them. But plenty of significant players do have generic body types. Benzema, Lucio, for example. And one of the things we noticed is, first of all, there's a lot of confusion around what the body types actually mean, because the terminology we use tends to be what's used on a particular popular database website, and they use things like short and lean, lean, high and average plus. And I think, Phil, there is confusion there. People don't necessarily know what those actually mean.
I think so, because whenever you think of high and average, you think, okay, this player is going to be tall and this player is going to be bulky. So whenever you think of a high and average plus, you would think of somebody who is taller and bulkier, somebody with a bigger frame. But what that translates to in-game is high and average becomes your Lucio, while a high and average plus is a Victor Lindelof. And Victor Lindelof is leaner than Lucio. So the high and average plus, which would usually have indicated bigger and bulkier, translates in-game to somebody who is the same height but is leaner and has a smaller frame.
And the reason why it occurred to me to look into this is because when gathering the data to add into the foot.gg database, there are no labels on the data. It just purely says a number 1 to 9. And that code has just been arbitrarily renamed and called High and Average or High and Average Plus, which, yeah, as you say, is confusing. But also actually looking at it, the reason why there are 9 of these generic body types is somewhat unclear, because actually when you compare, for example, a High and Average Plus, a lean and a shortened lean, there is really no difference between those three apart from the height of the player. So actually it feels like, now Phil, looking at this as we have, there are really just 3 body types: lean, average, and stocky.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's the visual distinction that we can see. And the other thresholds that have been applied have just been for their height, the thresholds being 170 centimeters and 185 centimeters. And the players who are below that, between that, those two, and above the 185, have been given like distinctions in their code. So we are under the impression that there are 9 different body types. Whenever you go to those thresholds, somebody say like Thomas Muller, who gets a High and Average Plus body type, and Guillermo Ochoa, who just gets a regular lean body type.
Mm.
When you look at them visually, when you look at them side by side, they are identical. Their bodies, the way that they're like displayed in game, despite having 2 different codes, they look exactly the same.
Yeah, they are visually identical. And it seems there are just 3 types, not all this complicated High and Average Plus, et cetera, et cetera. But it's possible it still has an impact in game. And this is something we're going to dig into further before having foot.gg present it as just 3, which would be nice and neat. Obviously, remember, you do have those unique body types as well, so there are plenty around. But for these apparently 3, not 9 categories, it'll be tricky to test whether there is actually a difference, because there are so many factors which influence physicality, whether it's weight, etc. You know?
Yeah, like there's going to be weight. And of course, like even if you like get the stats identical, there might be something that might shift that. But at least for now, visually speaking, there is no difference between a High and Average Plus body type and a lean body type, just their heights. And it's ever so clear if you get somebody who's at that threshold height, so the same height, but two, like, you know, across the 2 different body types, where there is just no difference. And I'd like to add some evidence to that, because whenever you go to, like, you know, create a custom pro, and I might not be having the right terminology for this, but when you go to like select their body type, you know, a custom, like a generated pro, and you give them a body type, you have a selection slider between 3 different body types: the slim one, the average one, and the stocky one, which gives more credence to
exactly
the idea that there are only 3 visual indicators for body types, and the height is just something else entirely.
And there we go. That's, you know, a FIFA myth busted, I guess. Right at the end of FIFA, as we know it. But I doubt it will change going to next cycle. It hasn't changed for a long time. So, yeah, an interesting thing. And maybe in future we can talk more about kind of the impact that actually has in game. And I guess, like, you know, we're talking about this, but actually this cycle has had one of the biggest physicality changes that we've seen. But it is more because of the whole lengthy meta. And that actually came up on the podcast on Monday when Japes, I think it was you, who asked whether we thought that lengthy had been a success this cycle. And I was actually interested to know, you know, from your perspective, let's come to you, Richard, about lengthy and whether you thought it had been a success. That was what Japes was asking.
I think it was a success, but in my eyes, like, I now don't think about if I'm making a player lengthy, controlled, or explosive. I just play the player. Whereas before, there was that added thought of, I want to make this person lengthy, or I want to make sure that, like, I'm only getting people in this position who are lengthy. So I would say it was a success, but now it's irrelevant.
Is it though?
In my eyes, like,
Kane, Lewandowski?
I think it could be. I don't know.
Yeah, I kind of disagree. I think it's still very much relevant. I mean, well, the point is that a lot of players now don't have the ability to be made lengthy because their agility is too high, right? So there is that. Surely, Richard, do you think that someone like Kane, and the reason he's so quick is because he's lengthy, right?
It could just be Kane. Like, that could be him. Do you know what I mean as well? Like, the reason that Benzema, Kane could be so good is they also have, like, ridiculous stats that make them that good. Is it the lengthy thing that's making them OP? I suppose we don't know.
Because I tried Lewandowski with an anchor, and he's lengthy with an anchor. And then I tried him with a hawk just because I was interested. he's not lengthy with a hawk, right? And he feels way better with an anchor running in behind. I'm not saying, you know, you necessarily definitely want to do that. You may want to, I don't know, make him feel better on the ball or whatever, but the pace on him over long distance was pretty noticeable. So I think it still matters. But does it matter as much as it did, I guess? You're saying no, you don't think so.
No, I mean, from the first few weeks and months of the game.
But it should be said, for the first few weeks, it was actually broken because players with lower dribbling were given an advantage because they weren't being slowed down by a glitch. So,
yeah, my overarching point, though, is you think about it when it comes to like center back some as well. And like, it definitely is a consideration with attackers. And I just, for me, the goal of introducing something like that was like pretty obviously to make players that were once upon a time deemed probably like not usable to be usable. So like, I think that's been achieved.
Yeah. And I think Josh's point, and I kind of agree with this, I'm not sure I gave a thought on it, but is that, I don't know whether making players just faster is the way to do that. I don't know. I don't think you got a chance to respond to that on the podcast, Japes, but
I don't think you can change the mechanics, though.
Mm.
Like, I sort of feel like the mechanics are what they are. We've talked about it a zillion times. Like, pace is always the first stat people look at. It's always going to matter. And in fact, in like real football, like pace kill, like speed kills. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's the one thing you can't teach. And players that have it, like, if you make two players like entirely equal in all of their abilities and you make one of them fast and one of them slow, the faster one is going to have an advantage.
Well, yeah, I guess, of course. But to expand it even further, actually, I think if you offered top level managers a team of all players who are very quick or all players who are very strong, it would be very quick that they went for, I would imagine. Because in real life, like in the game, you've got recovery speed, it helps there, and there are various other things as well. But I would actually say, I'd be interested to know what people think about this, but it really feels like strength is a bigger factor this cycle, having not been particularly influential, even beyond the whole lengthy element. It does feel like it's giving you a bigger advantage this cycle.
Oh, I absolutely agree with that one. Physical stats have changed up this year, how they matter. Like, obviously, like towards the beginning, lengthy played into that. To make a player lengthy, you had to boost their strength to like get above a certain threshold compared to their agility. But also, there have been other things that have been added into the game, especially next generation gameplay, that are affected by simply the strength stat. And having a higher strength, having higher aggression, has allowed players to perform better. And I would absolutely say, like, this year, more than any of the previous years, that the physicality of a player has impacted their performance in game. And I'll even go back, it's like when we were comparing lengthy, and people were like, okay, but lengthy is just a new gen mechanic. Why do my players feel better in old gen gameplay when I'm putting an architect on them? And that completely leaned into the fact that their strength was being boosted as much as possible, which made their gameplay feel a little bit more smoother. And I think it's been something that's been kind of a, not per se a hidden mechanic, but something that has been overlooked by people, that making a player stronger has made them feel smoother in game.
I think that's a fair point. Do you have any thoughts on kind of strength more generally, Richard? Like, do you feel like it's having more impact this year? Or
to an extent, I will notice my striker, if I'm using, say, a big striker, like brush off a defender, like sort of like animations where you like throw the defender down or like brush past them. But it's not something like, for me, when I think about lengthy or like strength and whatnot, I'm thinking, how often when I'm playing do I say, oh, look at that strength or look at that pace or whatever? I very rarely say, look at the strength of that player.
Yeah, I think that is a fair point. It's certainly not something that people are looking at as much as pace, obviously. But yeah, I don't know. Japes, have you found yourself using more physicality just overall rather than just lengthy? Or
I think it's more like correlation than causation. I like high aggression, and oftentimes high strength players seem to have high aggression on this game. So, you know, I don't think it's that I find myself using, like, Joshua Kimmich is a player that I love, and it's because his aggression stat is silly. But it has nothing to do really with his like strength ability.
Yeah, I do think there's a thing as well. I feel that strength is one thing, but I think a player has to have, I've always looked at this, I feel like few people actually end up looking at this, but weight is actually important in strength. To me, if a player has higher weight, they feel stronger and the strength kind of backs up that. Whereas other players, if they're like not very heavy, but strong, they're not able to physically compete.
That might be, because I haven't actually looked at the weight, like you've said, but I do look at a height and body types when you go through that, because we still don't have like complete transparency on how the collision mechanics specifically work. And what you're saying, you know, that a player that's, you know, heavier, like in their weight, will feel stronger, that's because some part of that is affecting how their collisions are working with the ball and with the other players around them. And yeah, there is merit to that idea that weight might be important to how strong a player feels in game, because it's not just, you know, a linear scale. Like there's multiple things that are coming into play, deciding how these players are interacting on the pitch, and weight might be one of them.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. Something to look out for. Maybe even BMI is something that people should look at, because the combination of height and weight, I guess, is going to be a factor to some extent as well. On that, you know, thrilling concept, we'll probably wrap up this podcast. First of all, Nafil, thank you very much for coming on this podcast and, you know, sharing your knowledge as always. I guess people can catch you on Twitter, certainly, and various other places as well.
Thank you for having me. It's been a wonderful time having a conversation with you guys. And yeah, you can find me on Twitter and obviously on FootGG, twitter.com/NafilKhan26.
Nice. Great. And then we move on to Richard. Thank you very much for stopping in, you know, amidst the busy schedule. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much as always. You can find me on any social media at rbuckley98.
Great. Thank you very much, Richard. And to Japes as well. Always great to have you on the podcast. You can find Japes at Air Japes these days.
Yeah, at Air Japes. I suppose mainly on Twitter. I don't really use any other platforms. And even then, I use Twitter kind of infrequently. So check me out. Say what's up.
Yeah, you can follow the pod at Foot Weekly Pod on Twitter. Me at Foot Weekly Ben. You can also follow foot.gg, actually, at footxgg, because you can't put a dot in it. But you can also visit the foot.gg website. A little podcast spoiler for everyone. Currently working on an app. It shouldn't be too long, hopefully, which will be great. Looking forward to that. If you've enjoyed this podcast, then you may wish to subscribe. If you don't already, you can do that via the usual podcast providing platforms, but you can also get an extra podcast every single week by subscribing for just £3 a month via Patreon. Just search Support for Weekly. Loads of content over there for you to enjoy. Thank you very much to all those supporters who are keeping this podcast going. It really does make a huge difference. And to those icon patrons: Dave B, Hugh J, Coach Vass, DJ FIFA Player, Alan G, Alistair, Anthony R, Dominic P, Rob P, Jeff B, Stephen F, Tom B, Damon H, David S, Nick Jack M, Eric T, Neil P, Adam G, Dan W.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Waterman, N. Hagman, Harry A, Jake G, Roger D, Springford, Alec, Bracco, Nishant, Harry P, Alex M, Lee A, Brendan W, Andrew C, Joe W, Timothy J, Dylan, J. Kel, Ibis 24, Adam R, Sam K, Graham W, Andy, Ads H2K, and Brian V. Plus a special thanks to Luke M, Dave B, Hugh J, Tom M, Darren W, and Pato Foot for advice and production assistance. Before I leave you, just one more thing to add, though. FIFA's a bit like life, really. It has its many ups and its many downs. If you're having a few more downs than ups in real life in these more difficult times, then please don't feel that you're alone or need to struggle on without taking action. If you go to thecalmzone.net, there's loads of resources, advice, support, or even just a friendly chat for anyone who needs it. If it sounds like it could help you, then head over to thecalmzone.net. And for now, have a good one, and I'll catch you on the next podcast.
Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.